Hello, everybody, and welcome to Press Any Button. I'm Eric. Nikki, are you awake? Oh, yeah, there you are.
Sorry, I've been awakened.
I guess we could call this Nikki's Awakening.
I guess we could.
God, that was pretty bad.
I thought that was pretty good. And now everyone knows my name also.
And today we're talking about The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening is a 1993 action-adventure game developed and published by Nintendo for the Game Boy. It is the first installment in the Legend of Zelda series for a handheld console. You play as the protagonist Link, who begins the game stranded on Koholint Island, a place guarded by a whale-like deity called the Windfish. You fight monsters and solve puzzles while searching for the 8 musical instruments that will awaken the sleeping Windfish and allow Link to escape the island.
Sounds cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, sounds like a game I would want to play. Oh, I did play it.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert. This is what Eric thinks of the game.
All right, so you got a good history for us, Nikki?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's get into it. Wide awake for this, my eyes are open, and I am listening to everything you say. I'm not going to doze off. I'm going to stay awake.
Good job, Eric. Good job. It's the bare minimum that you can do.
The bare minimum. I will be present in this moment with you.
Awesome. All right, so I'm going to take you back all the way.
1986.
Nope.
1991.
Nailed it. Yes. And programmer Kazuki Morita gets his hands on a Game Boy development kit. So he's like, what's a better idea to play around with this than just create a Zelda-like game for fun? Yeah. Not officially Zelda, but Zelda-like, you know?
Yeah. You have your own protagonist you call, like, Flink with his
or Blink
axe and axe guard.
Yeah, totally.
It could work.
Yes. So eventually, other staff members at Nintendo join in after hours, and before you know it, they have themselves a little evening club where they're spending their afternoon or their evenings after work playing around, experimenting with this Game Boy stuff, and stuff starts to look promising.
I mean, that's a club I want to be a member of.
Oh, yeah.
Like a play around developing a Zelda game club.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
But think about it. It's like these guys, they're spending all day creating video games. And then after they get off work, they go to do something for fun, which is also create video games.
But this game is fun. All right. This is the fun side project game. Not the 9-to-5 work.
Sure. So, of course, as you know, later in 1991, A Link to the Past was released for the SNES.
Yes. Yeah. Great game.
Big hit. Yes. And what happens is director Takashi Tezuka, who worked on all the other Zelda games, worked on Super Mario, a bunch of other stuff, he asked for permission from Nintendo to develop a handheld Zelda title, which originally was intended to just be a port of A Link to the Past.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned that because have you ever played a Link to the Past?
No, this is my first and only Zelda game I've ever played.
Okay, I really closely associate Link's Awakening and A Link to the Past just because the styles and gameplay is so similar between those two games.
Yeah.
So originally, Link's Awakening started off as the idea was to port A Link to the Past to Game Boy.
Yeah, and to advance this project quicker, Nintendo reassembled a majority of the Link to the Past team to work on this project. So,
oh, cool.
Pretty much the whole team that worked on Link's Awakening worked on A Link to the Past.
Yeah, that makes sense. It really does play very similar to A Link to the Past.
Yes. However, over time, Link's Awakening kind of started to evolve into its own thing.
Yeah.
A whole new original game.
So did they start incorporating that late night Zelda Club code into it and like start like, yeah.
Well, at this point, they had already gotten permission to do the game. So yeah. Hopefully they don't have to do it after hours anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And they're actually getting paid to do this game like a normal team would. The freeform development style that they got to start out with is what kind of resulted in the game's unrestrained contents, such as unauthorized cameo appearances.
Oh, yeah.
From characters from Mario and the Kirby series, and even some other random series that I'd never heard of.
Yeah, I definitely love those Mario cameos in the game.
Oh, yeah, like the Yoshi plushy thing that you have to win.
Goombas.
Yeah, Goombas.
And Thumps.
Yeah. Even the thing you have to save, the, what is it, the Bow Wow?
Oh, yeah, the
that
Bow Wow.
That is basically a Chomper, right?
Yeah, Chain Chomp.
Like, Chain Chomper. So
yeah.
There's a lot of things that are called different things, but they are the characters.
Yeah, you can definitely tell.
There's like a scene where I think a farmer is showing you like this person that he's been talking to, and it's just a picture of Princess Peach, but it says like Christine at the bottom or something like that.
Yeah, he was getting catfished. That
yeah,
was the whole joke.
Yeah, that's the whole joke, and I thought that was kind of hilarious. So that's kind of fun. Tezuka sought to make Link's Awakening a spin-off, and he gave instructions to the writers to omit common series elements. So, did you notice that anything that normally would be in a Zelda game was missing?
Yeah, I mean, the most obvious one being Zelda herself. Yeah,
exactly. Also, anything else?
Hyrule, yeah.
Yeah, you're not in Hyrule. And also, there's no Triforce relic in this game either.
Oh, yeah, the Triforces. Yeah. No Ganon or Ganondorf. That's usually the main villain of most Zelda games.
Oh, okay. So there's usually not, like, what is it? This a windfish? As your
Yeah, not usually, like, as the main thing. Well, in this case, the windfish isn't really the main bad guy, but, like,
that's true. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of strange. I'm like, okay, the one and only Zelda game I've played doesn't even have Zelda in it.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have the things that I associate with Zelda, like the Triforce and stuff like that. So it's like, maybe I need to try another Zelda game to really get a feel of like the whole Zelda like experience.
Yeah, as much as I love this game, I do view it as kind of like a more stripped down Zelda game in a lot of ways. I still really like this game.
I mean, you can
lot,
only so. Do so much on Game Boy, so
yeah, the hardware, you know. The hardware was very limiting at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can really tell even with just the basic setup of, here are your two buttons.
Yeah,
you can choose one to be the sword, but you know you're gonna only have one other one to work with.
Eventually, in development, they bring on a writer named Yoshaki Koizumi, who had previously also worked on A Link to the Past and wrote the help of the plot for that game.
Okay.
And he's the one that came up with the main story of Link's Awakening, provided the idea of the island in a dream, and conceived interactions with the villagers. So the same person that kind of wrote and helped with the plot for A Link to the Past also helped write this story as well.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, there's not a ton of story elements within the game, but yeah, it is kind of a cool overarching story.
True. Altogether, it took the team about a year and a half to develop Link's Awakening. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad. And originally, it was released for Game Boy in Japan, June 1993, North America in August, and Europe in December of 1993.
Okay, nice. Getting all three in 1 year.
Yeah. And then later in 1998, 1999, it was kind of re-released for Game Boy Color.
Yeah, that was the one I had.
Yeah, it was kind of released to promote the Game Boy Color because they just wanted people to buy it, obviously. So they were like, what is a better way than attach a Zelda game to it? that'll get people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so
that's smart marketing.
That came out in Japan and North America in 1998 and then Europe in 1999. And the major differences in the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color version is Link's Awakening DX, that's the one for color, features obviously fully colorized graphics and is backward compatible with the original Game Boy, but it contains a new optional dungeon with unique enemies and puzzles based on color.
Wow.
So you obviously can't play this one on the Game Boy
if you want
the new optional dungeon, I guess.
But, yeah, I got you.
Yeah. So not much of a difference, but, you know, just enough to make people want to buy it with their Game Boy Color, of course. And that's all about it. We got all the way up to being released. So what do you think about all that history?
Yeah, pretty cool. So, yeah, it started off as a late night Zelda club.
Pretty much just testing out what the Game Boy's going to be capable of, what's not going to be capable of. And then it kind of just turned into its own separate game. And I have some really fun facts. So,
yeah, nice.
Are you ready for some fun facts?
Yeah, let's hear those facts.
All right. So, fun fact number one, Tezuka intended the game's world to have a similar feeling to an American television series. Any guesses on what series?
Gilligan's Island.
No.
Not Gilligan's Island.
I'll give you a hint. It's one of my stepdad's favorite restaurants also.
Twin Peaks?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, that's funny.
Which, like, Link's Awakening, Twin Peaks features characters in a small town and also waking up in, like, a whole different world, you know, that kind of thing.
That's funny, yeah.
He suggested that the characters of Link's Awakening be written as, air quotes, suspicious types, akin with those in Twin Peaks, a theme which eventually carried on into later Zelda titles. So, it's kind of like Link wakes up in this small town with all these weird townsmen, townspeople.
That's awesome. I had no idea that there was a Link. Also, I've never seen Twin Peaks.
I've never seen Twin Peaks either. I know our friend Michael is really into it. He said it's really good. So, like, we should maybe try.
Yeah.
I know there's an old version, and I think they rebooted it at some point, and there's, like, a newer version.
Yeah.
So
that is funny that there's a connection between the game and that show.
Fun fact number two. Miyamoto, who we all know, served as a producer of Link's Awakening, but did not provide creative input as far as, you know, the story and all that went. However, he did participate as a game tester, and his opinions obviously greatly influenced the latter half of the development.
Yeah, that's my impression. Like, once you get to that kind of high level position, you can start just critiquing and being like more of the tester and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And be making those high management decisions as opposed to like getting involved with every little
thing.
Yeah, design up element and stuff.
True. Fun fact number three, several elements from Link's Awakening were reused in later Zelda titles. For example, programmer Morita created a fishing minigame that reappeared in Ocarina of Time, among others.
Yeah.
Tanabe, who was another one of the main writers for Link's Awakening, implemented a trading sequence.
The trading sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tezuka compared the trading sequence to an old Japanese folktale called Straw Millionaire, which basically is where someone trades up from a piece of a straw to something of greater value. So this is another one that also keeps going in other Zelda games. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, the trade quests. The trade quests are always a fun element. Like, you get an item and you're like, okay, who might want this weird thing?
Yeah. So even though this was kind of like one of the smaller Zelda games, probably, just because it was on Game Boy, like, it did have a lot of influence and is pretty, like, significant to the overall Zelda game series, yeah.
Yeah.
And then all the later games that came after, so.
Yeah, that's my impression, too. This is kind of like one of the ones that got the ball rolling with a lot of these kind of Zelda concepts.
Yeah. Last but not least, fun fact number 4. Which I will preface, I found this online on the Zelda fandom page, and this is what the trivia fact says. But I looked it up, and I've got some, I don't know, not concerns, but I think there might be an error. I want, if you're listening, I want you to look this up, look up all the maps that I'm going to talk about just now, and let me know. So, fun fact number 4. With the exception of Eagle's Tower, every dungeon in Link's Awakening has a map that forms a picture of an object. For example, a key in the case of Key Cavern.
I totally did not pay any attention at all to these, to like the overall maps. I mean, okay. Obviously use the maps, but.
Well, I looked it up, okay, on the internets, thank God. And I have a picture of all the maps here. And Eagle's Tower, to me, it looks like an eagle's head.
Yeah.
So, I'm not really sure where they got their information, if they did not go look at the maps themselves. But to me, Eagle's Tower, the map does look like an eagle head. So, if you're listening, just Google, you know, Eagle's Tower, Link's Awakening dungeon map. Look at it. I want to know if you think it's an eagle's head.
Yeah, I looked at it, and to me, you know, it's kind of stretching it. I mean,
it's with blocks, okay? Like, it's like an 8-bit thing.
But yeah, no, I got you.
Can only be so detailed.
That's true. I feel like some of the other ones are kind of stretching it to, like, what was it, the catfish mall one?
Yeah, the catfish mall. Yeah. Like, Anyways, go look at the maps. See if you can see what the pictures are. You know, we'll start a good old-fashioned debate.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, Eric, do you want to talk a little bit? I know the story isn't like that in depth, but do you kind of want to go over the main story?
Yeah, the main story is like really, really simple. It's like Link gets shipwrecked on an island.
Yeah, pretty much he wakes up on an island, stranded on an island that's guarded by a whale-like deity called the Windfish, who we already talked about.
And like, even like throughout the whole process, everyone's like, yeah, if you wake up the windfish, the island's going to disappear as well as everyone on it.
Bah, bah, bah.
And Link's, I guess he doesn't say anything, but he's like, I don't give a fuck.
Well, apparently you play as Link, but they let you name yourself whatever you want, which is weird to me. It's like, why are they letting you name yourself whatever you want?
I mean, your name doesn't really come up that much. I mean, it does, but
I don't know, but why don't they just make you be Link if, you know, you're supposed to be Link?
It's kind of like
I name myself Nikki because that's my name. And I don't know. It was like afterwards, I was like, oh, I should have just said my name was Link because that would have felt more natural.
I think it's always a nice touch to let you name your own character. Even if the character does kind of have a default name.
Yeah, I don't know. For this, I don't think so. I think if you're supposed to be Link, just say you're Link and don't let people pick their name. Like if I was playing God of War or something and I'm playing Kratos and they let me change my name to not Kratos, that would be super weird for me.
But then you'll miss all those like fun dialogue things where, you know, they say your name but they say something funny.
You don't need it in every game. Okay?
Yes, you do.
We just had it in the Sonic game. Like, you know, it's good sometimes, you don't need it all the time.
I feel like that should be the main debate. Should you always be able to name your character or no?
So anyways, apparently you're Link, even though you can name yourself whatever you want. And you fight all these monsters and solve puzzles to get the 8 musical instruments that you will need to awaken the Windfish, right?
Yeah.
And this allows you to get off the island.
Yeah, so easy. Yeah, you play the instruments, the little egg opens up, you beat the final boss, and then you wake up in the middle of the ocean on some debris.
Yeah, can you tell me about this egg thing? Because I didn't make it to the end.
What? You had me but do all this stuff?
But I was reading, I have a bonus fun fact about the egg thing, but okay. I need you to describe it to me.
Okay, so the egg is like, it looks like an egg.
Mm-hmm. And when you, is this after you play all the instruments, like the egg cracks open or
when
what?
When you play all the instruments, yeah, a little like Link size crack appears in the egg and you go inside the egg where you fight the final boss. But there's also still a puzzle within the egg. It's not like a full on dungeon, but there's still a puzzle you have to figure out.
Interesting.
And then you fight the final boss and then, yeah, all the instruments play and the windfish wakes up and yeah, pretty epic. And then the island disappears. I assume murdering everybody on the island in the process.
Probably.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, bonus fun fact, Tanabe, one of the writers I talked about earlier, he had the egg idea back before when he was working on A Link to the Past. But it didn't make it into the story. Oh. So, he really pushed for that to be like incorporated into this game. I'm not really sure why it was so important to him, but I think it's funny that it's like this random thing and it made it into the game. He was determined.
You know, the higher ups are going like, oh, there he goes with that egg again.
Just let him do it.
Yeah, I guess this one is less important. Let's just let him do it on the Game Boy one.
That way we don't have to hear about it anymore.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so that's the story. So Eric, what are some things you like about this game?
Yeah, so the game is an absolute classic that still holds up well today, in my opinion. Like I was saying earlier, I tend to link this game together with A Link to the Past just because they came out at almost the same time and their styles and gameplay are so similar. And now I'm learning that, you know, they're, you know, a lot of the same people worked on both. So yeah, that makes sense. This is kind of the point in time to me where Nintendo really started to perfect the Zelda formula and it really shows in this game.
Mm-hmm. It's the third game, right?
It's the fourth game.
The fourth game.
Yeah. Mm. Because, yeah, the first Zelda, just called, yeah, The Legend of Zelda. Then you had the second one, both for the Nintendo. And then Link to the Past was for the Super Nintendo. And then this one came out for the Game Boy.
So it took them three games and then they finally got it. I'm just kidding.
Well, I think A Link to the Past is very, like, that's a very high ranked game.
Too. Yeah, I'm just playing. I think people pretty much like all of them.
Yeah, that's true. And I will say it's important to keep in mind the historical context of the game. The first couple Zelda games had absolutely brutal difficulty. There were very few hints of what to do or where to go. And in this game, you know, you had Nao giving you directions after each accomplishment. You had an old man that you could call for hints on the phone. So as far as like figuring out what to do, this game was leaps and bounds.
What?
Like ahead of the first two.
Oh, wow. That's crazy because I'm over here like, man, this is not easy. I keep getting lost. I don't know where to go. And I'm over here playing the easy version. I didn't even know.
I mean, the game itself isn't that easy, but like...
Just compared to the other ones.
Yeah, compared to the other ones, it is a lot easier. They ended up preserving the feeling of exploration without leaving you completely clueless of what to do next, which is really nice.
Yeah, like you said, there's lots to explore in this game, which is cool because you wouldn't expect to have so much area that you could cover in such a small memory game, I guess.
Yeah.
Like the maps are pretty huge. There's a lot of different areas. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, for the Game Boy, it's a huge space and you actually have a map, which is pretty impressive too.
Yeah.
The Game Boy, yeah. So yeah, there are a lot of neat features. And like the first Zelda game didn't really have a map included in the game. Mm-hmm. I forget about the second one. I didn't play the second one as much.
Yeah.
I think they had one in A Link to the Past. But yeah, just being able to incorporate the map within the game for the Game Boy version was impressive.
I also like all the characters, like the random townspeople.
Yeah.
You have like, what's the witch called?
Oh, I forget.
Oh, just called the witch. I don't know. They all have funny names. And now I'm blanking on them, but wasn't there like Miss Meow?
Yeah, Miss Meow.
I don't know. They all kind of have funny names and like the dialogue is pretty funny. Like there's jokes, a lot of jokes in there and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and
that
you never,
I was cracking up.
You never made it to the Animal Village either.
I didn't.
There's a whole new cast of characters in that. Yeah. But
I mean, I'll probably keep playing, but like, the characters I met so far, I don't know, this is pretty funny. Even the bosses that you fight are kind of silly.
Yeah.
Like the one genie, it's like, ha ha ha, you can't do anything to me because I got my bottle.
Yeah.
And then you're like, F that bottle. It's like, oh God, what do I do now?
He really emphasizes the bottle when he's taunting you.
Yeah. That's something else that you like.
So sticking with the whole historic context theme.
Oh gosh.
If you looked at the vast majority of Game Boy games at the time, like, they were terrible.
Really?
Yeah. Most Game Boy games are bad.
Okay.
You play for like five or 10 minutes before getting bored. And then you put the game back until you forgot how bad it was. Pretty much. Yeah, that's a lot of game. For every good game, there's probably like two or three really bad games.
Yeah, I mostly played Tetris, which I feel like is a really good Game Boy game. It's like perfect for Game Boy.
Yeah. So beyond this game, like, the good games are like the Pokemon series, Mario's series, Tetris, and there are some other series that are pretty decent. Mm-hmm. I think some of the Mega Man and Castlevania games are pretty okay. But yeah, there weren't a whole lot of other good games to play on Game Boy at the time. At least that had like any sort of depth to them.
Yeah.
Like that you could kind of like save your progress and work on stuff and come back to.
Yeah. There's like so many Easter eggs in this game.
Oh yeah.
If you look them all up, the list is huge. Like, and everything from, you know, having Mario characters, Kirby characters, other things like that to... I don't know. There's just all kinds of hidden stuff in this game.
Yeah, it's really nice. I love all the Mario characters. It's just so weird to see them in this game, but it's still like really cool.
There's like a bunch of like song Easter eggs too. Like if you name yourself Zelda in the game, you get like a cool remix version of like the theme song. If you're in... What is the guy before the third dungeon's house they have to get all the leaves for?
Oh, Prince something. I forget his name.
If you stay in his house long enough for the song to go through, it'll eventually stop, and then it'll do like a remix version of it.
Oh, that's cool.
So there's just like all kinds of cool little things you can look up and do in this game.
It's that's really neat. Yeah.
And speaking of the music in this game is really good. Like, Zelda music in general is really good. It's kind of known for having good music. And I think the music for this game is really good. And the sound effects and stuff are good, too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually had that, too. And it feels a little redundant because, yeah, Zelda games, you know, have great music, just as a matter of fact.
That's true.
But one of the things I really liked about that point was that I really liked how they made music a central theme to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're collecting the instruments and you're getting like a little tease to what the overall like Ballad of the Windfish is going to sound like each time until you finish the game and get to hear like the full Game Boy attempted orchestral version of the song.
Yeah.
Which is pretty neat.
Do you have any other things you want to list out that you like?
Yeah.
I have one more.
So the game balance between solving puzzles and fighting enemies is really good. The difficulty also ramps at about the right pace for me. And while the game can get frustrating, it never feels like overwhelmingly like impossible or hard.
Yeah.
I take it that you might not agree with that.
Okay. I don't think it's impossible, but it definitely is a lot harder for me, I think, just because I've never played a Zelda game before or like really any game kind of like this before, so you definitely have more of an advantage than me, but that's probably okay. I don't think the game is, well, so far I didn't get to the end, but I don't think it's that impossible yet.
Yeah, I feel like the puzzles are the harder part of the game than the actual enemies and the fighting goes. I feel like some of the bosses can be a little tough, but some of them are also like really pretty easy.
Yeah.
And then, like, the hard part has always been, like, getting through the dungeons, I think.
That's true. The dungeons are definitely the hardest part.
Yeah. And
not getting lost.
And that's, like, my final pro. Like, I feel like the dungeons are all really well designed. But that's pretty much true. Most Zelda games, in particular, I feel like my favorite is Dungeon 7, Eagle's Tower.
Uh-huh.
And the main reason I like it so much, even though it was, like, really frustrating when I first played it, it's just the whole mechanic of needing to collapse the third floor into the second floor. It's just such a smart, unconventional puzzle mechanic.
Yeah.
To have to physically change the dungeon itself in order to solve it. Yeah,
that's pretty cool sounding.
Yeah, so just stuff like that. Like, just really, really cool ideas.
One thing I liked and really appreciated about the dungeons, too, and this is my last pro, is that, like, even if you died in the dungeons, it still kind of saved your spot in the dungeon. So if you died, you didn't have to start all the way over, which I thought was going to happen the first time, you know, I did a dungeon. I went back to try to get the key that I'd already gotten again. I was like, it's not there. And I was like, oh, it's not going to make you redo everything.
Yeah, it saves your progress.
Which is really nice because... God, that would be so annoying if you had to start over each time. At least for me, because I had to start over a lot. So, like, if I had to literally do everything over again, I probably wouldn't have got as far as I got.
Yeah, definitely a nice touch. And then, like, I remember the very first Zelda game, you would always start back with 3 hearts, no matter how many, like, heart containers you had.
Yeah.
And in this game, you don't start from 3. You don't have a full set of hearts, but you don't have, like, only 3.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of nice in that sense. Okay, cons. What's a con, Nikki?
My main con, and I guess it's not really like the game's fault or anything. It's more of the Game Boy's fault. But the fact that you just constantly have to swap out items in your inventory and you can only have 2 things at once, it's just really frustrating, like extremely frustrating to me. It breaks up the gameplay. It is tedious. It's hard to remember when you're having to swap items out several times in a dungeon, room to room, you know? It's just like having to stop and switch it out. And like, if you don't remember, then you die, you know? It's just, I don't know. That was probably my least favorite thing about the game.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not really the game's fault. It's for Game Boy, but like, I wish there would have been some kind of easier way to switch.
Yeah.
I'm sure they could have figured out something, even if you're using the D-pad or something to switch through. Like, I don't know. I feel like there had to be a better way.
Yeah, it's tough because Game Boy had the D-pad, start, select, A, B. Like, those are your those are your buttons.
Yeah, I know.
That's all you got to work with.
So what if you had pressed down an A and that did something?
Well, then up, what happens if you wanted to use that button while facing down, while holding down, though?
True. I don't know. you know, I'm just saying. There probably was something.
Yeah. Maybe you could, like, hold select or... Yeah, I don't know. You're getting really into the... You got to know, like, a code.
Anyways, that was something I really just... Oh, man. It just kind of almost ruined the game a little bit for me just because I'm not good at remembering it. And it just made the game like extra hard, sort of.
Yeah, I gotcha. One of mine is like the text boxes.
Oh, my God. I have that too.
So like if you so much as bump into an object, you don't currently have the right item to deal with. And even sometimes if you do have the right item to deal with it. Like, you'll get a long, slow text box describing what the object is and giving you a hint of how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And it will do this every single time.
And it's like 4 or 5 pages of text that you have to just skip through. Like,
it'll be something like, boy, this vase sure is heavy. If only I had some way of lifting this. Yeah, it'll be like something like that.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not even trying to lift you. I just accidentally bumped into you.
Yeah, and like, that's like not like... That's not doing anything. That's not attempting to really interact with the object. That's just accidentally bumping your character.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. That and like some of the bosses just saying the same thing over and over again. Like the genie. Yeah. It's just like, oh my God, if I have to read your stupid spiel one more time, I'm going to punch this TV.
Yeah, it's like it's helpful exactly one time, and then it's like there's got to be a way to turn hints off or something on like the main screen.
There should be, anyways.
Or a wider dialogue option. But yeah, this is the early days. Yeah. This is Game Boy. So
yeah, and that was something that I didn't like about Super Mario World 2 was just like some of the repetitiveness with the text and stuff. It wasn't as bad in Super Mario World, obviously. But like, you know, when you're fighting some of the bosses, just be like, oh, great. I have to like watch this whole thing every time or whatever.
I have to watch this whole intro again. Oh yeah. That was the final boss for you, right? You kept having to watch the whole sequence of Bowser flying in and slowly hovering over you.
Yeah. So another thing that kind of grinded my gears,
grinds Nikki's gears
on this game, is that it was just, even with the map for me, it was kind of easy to just like get lost. Yeah. And not necessarily lost as in you didn't know where you were, because you did have a map, but lost as like, where did that owl tell me I needed to go? And where is that section on the map? Exactly, because the little grid didn't tell you, I don't know, at least I don't remember, think it did, like what areas, like,
yeah,
according to the owl was saying.
Yeah, so. What usually ends up happening is you just like wander around so much where eventually stuff starts looking familiar and you read signs. And
then you just memorize the whole thing.
Well, you don't necessarily memorize every little thing, but you do kind of like start to get the sense of, like, once you play further in the game, I feel like you have to backtrack all, through these same areas a bunch of times, so you end up getting the names like pretty well down and where things are and all that stuff.
Gotcha. And then, like, I don't know if you end up getting a whole bunch of those warp spots.
You get,
but like the travel is slow. Okay. Yeah. The map travel is slow.
Yeah. And it's, so you get probably, I think, four total is that, I think that's right. The fourth one is the kind of the dumbest one, in my opinion.
I'm like, I got through like the third dungeon and I still only have one little warp thing.
the fourth warp point, in my opinion, is like easily the most pointless one, because it's like towards the very end of the eighth dungeon, like one of the very last dungeons, you go up on this ledge. And that's where the warp point is, but it doesn't really connect to anything convenient except a certain point in the dungeon.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I guess if you needed to leave, well, I think I know why it's there, because there's a part where you have to chuck a bunch of bombs in there. I guess they're giving you an option to go back to town and get bombs.
Get more bombs. Yeah.
I guess that's the point of it, but I don't know. It just seems like, yeah, I agree. There could have been a few more warp points for sure.
But yeah, that's all I've got. Overall, I think, you know, pretty good game. I don't know if it's necessarily like for me 100%, like, but I think I can get the appeal. I can understand why it's classic, why people like it and all that stuff.
Yeah, you can recognize something as good and then just recognize it's also not your thing too. That's totally, to me, that's totally acceptable. If it doesn't click the right buttons for you, you know, just move on. There's plenty of other good stuff out there.
And everyone's brain works differently. You're gonna have stuff that you're good at and stuff that's frustrating, and if a game is too frustrating, it's just not that much fun to play. At least for me.
I will say, like, I feel like later Zelda games do get a little bit better as far as like having buttons to map.
Yeah, when you get more and button options.
Yeah, having warp points and stuff like that. So
yeah.
So I don't think you should entirely give up on the series, but I will say, like, the having to pause and select items sometimes is kind of like a heavy feature in a lot of these games.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Boo.
I had one last con. But it's really not a con. So I had that the bow price is pretty high. It's like almost 1,000 rupees, you know. Uh-huh. But, you know, you don't really need it until like towards the end of the game, and then you could also just steal it if you really wanted to. So it just,
you said that you can steal it, but what happens if you steal it?
Oh, the shopkeeper murders you next time. And I forget if it's this game or A Link to the Past where everyone will refer to you as thief after you steal it. And it will, like,
it's like shame.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, you got the item, but now, like,
whatever
you named your character, it doesn't stick anymore. Now you're just thief to everybody.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, so it does make you feel guilty about it.
So, Eric, do you have like a whole bunch of strategy for this game?
I have a little bit. For me, the most obvious thing is that if you get stuck and like are pretty frustrated, just go look something up. Don't keep it from
cheat. No, I'm just kidding.
Unless you're really trying to challenge yourself, but still, even then, I'm like, yeah, just have fun, enjoy the game. Don't take it too seriously. Get that one hint and then move on to the next thing. And yeah.
Yeah. So strategy number one, don't be afraid to cheat.
Yeah, I would say, and honestly,
I don't count walkthroughs as cheating necessarily, but I'm just playing.
Yeah, I feel like especially with the older Zelda games, you kind of have to look stuff
unless you just want to walk around a lot. Just walk around. not knowing what to do.
Especially when it comes to searching for all those shells, man. Because they could be anywhere in this whole white thing, and there's a lot of space. Okay, the next one is, utilize the spin sword attack. It's ridiculously useful. Not only does it do more damage than a normal, like, just swiping sword attack, but it also has a ridiculous range that it covers.
Yeah. It's but all... you have to wait for it.
Yeah, that's its only fault. It takes a little bit to charge.
I'd always get attacked while I was waiting for it to charge. I'm like, ah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you don't have a choice, just you swipe. But if you can use it, like, it's really useful. And then it's also great for, like, farming. If you're, like, farming in the grass or something.
Yeah.
And you're trying to, like, cut a bunch of, like, grass stalks.
Especially when you're, like, in that maze, the grass maze thing. Yeah. That's very helpful.
Yeah, the range of the attack is just so useful in that sense. So this has more to do with the dungeons, but there are always rooms in the dungeon that require specific triggers, such as killing all the enemies or pushing a movable block in a certain direction. Yeah. It's up to you to kind of experiment and figure out what
works.
What works, yeah. You can also get, like, context clues of what might be blocking several paths to get an idea of what the dungeon item will be and how it might be useful. So, yeah, if you see, like, the same type of thing
blocking your path,
you can kind of get an idea of, like, okay, I'm probably going
to
get
something to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Pegasus boots.
Yeah.
Like, there's, all those, like, blocks. It's like, nope. You'll have to get something for this. And you keep seeing those blocks everywhere. It's like, okay. I see what's happening.
So another one dealing with the dungeons is that there usually aren't very many, like, pointless rooms or areas in the dungeon. Like, if you unlock a door or a path and nothing significant seems to be there, you're probably missing something.
Yeah.
Or maybe just lacking the dungeon item, which may be useful to trigger the room in a specific way.
That's true, because sometimes monsters or enemies will just pop up out of the ground. Sometimes there's, like, a spot in the wall that you need to, like, blow a bomb or something to get through.
There's always something. They don't usually give you paths that don't connect
for
or
nothing.
don't do anything. Then that has to do with the fact that's with the pro that the dungeons are very well designed in these games. And then my last one is that the hints can be very helpful in this game and sometimes completely necessary in order to figure out some of the very vague puzzles.
Yeah.
And in fact, the dungeons might be designed around you figuring out, like, you finding the stone slab to read the stone slab to figure out, like, okay, like, I need to attack these specific enemies from above to get the key.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Or in the specific order.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and it's not just something you would naturally stumble upon. So, yeah, getting some of those hints is really important in the game, specifically this game.
Yeah.
And did you have much strategy stuff, Nikki?
Not really. Like, just kind of what you said. Don't forget to switch out your items. That's the biggest strategy.
Yeah, that's important.
It's like usually, especially in a dungeon, it's like if you enter a new room, just check it out and see what items you need and pause and change them. So, Eric, want to talk about the future?
Sure, yeah.
Which, obviously, there's one big one that we all know about. It's all over the internet, all over social media.
Yeah, I really couldn't find anything.
Yeah, right. You couldn't find anything?
Yeah, couldn't find anything on the new... Nothing new with the Zelda series. I don't think we have anything to talk about here.
Yeah, nothing at all. But, yeah, Tears of the Kingdom just came out, like, this last week or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, someone's already beat it.
Well, I mean, obviously people have beat it.
Well, I mean, someone beat it, like, the first day it was out. I was like, Jesus, people. Like, savor the game, you know, enjoy the game.
It's like getting an entire pizza and trying to eat it in 2 minutes.
Whatever. I'll beat it real fast this time and I'll play it again and I'll, you know, play it slow. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, it was funny. It was like the game was out for like a day and, like, I saw on Twitter it was like someone already had a speed run of it. I'm like, Jesus.
Well, you
guys
know,
are way better than me.
You know how competitive the speed running community is.
Oh yeah. Well, speaking of speed running, really quick, I actually have up here the world records for Link's Awakening. Do you want to know what they are, or take any guesses real quick?
Ooh, how fast can you beat this game?
Yeah, so if you're doing 100%,
ooh, 100%.
How fast? What do you think the record is?
I want to say 3 hours.
58 minutes and 41 seconds.
For the 100%?
Yeah, for 100%. And that was actually from February 2021. So that's a pretty new one.
What's the any percent?
Any percent is 1 minute, 21 seconds, and 333 milliseconds.
Wait.
So they must have beat the record by just a little bit, because I don't know why else they would have milliseconds listed. But yeah, and then there's...
Wait, so the any percent is literally a minute?
1 minute, 21 seconds, 333.
Okay, you
got to
be glitching to the end screen.
Oh, somehow. All instruments, speed run, 13 minutes and 49 seconds.
Okay. Wow, 13 minutes?
Any percent warpless. Okay, warpless any percent, 41 minutes and 47 seconds.
Okay.
So
they're finding ways to glitch in the game and workplaces. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's fun. I gotta watch some of these speed runs. They sound ridiculous.
Especially that like any percent one that's 1 minute. We gotta go watch that on YouTube.
Yeah.
ASAP. So Eric, did you find anything else about the future? Because that's really all I could find.
So I did find one thing, but it's not really the future. It's more like 2019, if you call that the future. So they did like do a complete remake of this game, obviously, in 2019.
Yeah.
Like the graphics are beautiful.
For Switch,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for the Switch. I never actually played this game, but like it looked really cool. I think they made some changes to it. Like I know like in the new game, there's 50 seashells because that kept coming up when I was looking that up. But yeah.
Yeah, I kept seeing that whenever I was like trying to look up fun facts. It was like giving me fun facts for this new one.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is not correct. Like those graphics are way too advanced.
Yeah, it's way too pretty for game one.
All right. So Eric, everybody probably wants to know, did you find enough secret seashells to unlock a sword? Like a special sword, right?
Yeah, so I did. I got the 20 out of 26 shells needed for the sword, and I only had to look up one of them.
Wow, yeah. I don't believe you.
I had 19, and I'm just like, fuck it.
I need one more.
I don't care.
Well, that's cool. So what do you get? Like, what's the difference in the sword? Is it just, like, more powerful?
Yeah, so it does more damage, and then when you're full health, it does the, like, the sword beam from the first game.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Sword beam? That sounds neat.
Yeah, did you ever play the original where when you had a full set of heart, you do like a little sword beam, your sword would like...
I told you this is my first and only Zelda game, remember?
Okay, yeah, so yeah, it's, sword beam is pretty cool. It's only, like I said, you only have that effect when you have a completely full set of hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of motivation.
It's kind of neat, yeah.
Take a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But I will say also...
And the fine hearts when you're in the grass and stuff.
Also, like, by the time I personally got the sword, it was almost useless because, you know, like...
You'd already beat the game.
Well, I had, like, the final boss left, I guess, so it was kind of useful for him, but at the same time, like, just for fighting regular enemies, like, the magic wand is really, really good. So it's like, you know.
Cool. Well, I guess you won't be rapping then. Boo.
Yeah.
Zelda Rap would have been cool. But there is a million other games that we can pick.
And who knows? So, there might be a Zelda game in the future where we rap on.
That's what I'm saying. There's a million other Zelda games to pick. Oh,
true.
For the future. So, Eric, isn't there something kind of special happening with our next episode?
Yeah. So, we're going to have my good friend Seth on.
Yeah.
And I have his email right here.
Seth,
and
or Mikey, as we call him.
Yeah, that's what I refer to him as in high school.
Yeah, and you guys have been friends forever.
Yeah, way back.
Yes, so we're going to have Seth on. And what game did he choose?
So he is choosing Call of Duty, specifically the DMZ mode and the new Call of Duty. And then as far as the challenge goes, we're going to have to work together as a team on this, the three of us. So you, me, and Seth.
Okay.
We're going to have
Dream team.
Kill the chemist and extract successfully with his gun.
Okay.
And that's going to be the challenge. So I have no idea what that means.
Me either. That's some weird bro language. I don't know.
Then hopefully Seth is prepared to...
Because like, to me, you're the chemist. Are we killing you?
Oh God, please don't. So yeah, Nikki and Seth are going to be ganging up on me in Call of Duty apparently.
And Call of Duty is free? right?
Yeah. So the full game is $60, but this is one of the free modes in the new game.
Okay.
So this cool. this one will be free to play.
Sweet.
But just specifically like this, and I think one other mode.
Cool. So we have to get together with Mikey. Man, to do this challenge.
Like I said, I hope he's going to have fun holding our hands on this.
Yeah, for real.
Because we are going to be out of our depth.
I mean, we're good at first-person shooters, so hopefully that'll be worth something.
It doesn't matter if you played a bunch. There's always a learning curve. Like,
that's true.
So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm excited.
Yeah, it should be fun. I like the idea of a group challenge for the three of us.
Same.
We'll find out how close we get or if we manage to do it or not.
I think we're gonna be the dream team.
You think so?
Oh yeah.
All right,
well, we'll see you guys next time.
All right, bye.
If you liked our episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcast, rate us on Spotify. You can also visit our really cool website, pressanybutton.net, and you can listen to our raps, leave us comments, and do all kinds of other cool stuff there. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.